There are about 70,000 graduate students around Boston, and many of them receive tuition waivers in exchange for teaching classes or doing research. These waivers are not considered taxable income, but under the version of the tax plan that the House passed last week, they would be. Aaron Russo is a PhD student at the Harvard-MIT program in health sciences and technology. She's studying mental health disorders, and she says the bill would, quote, devastate graduate research in the United States. She wrote an op-ed for the New York Times with the headline, "The House Just Voted to Bankrupt Graduate Students." And she joins me now. Thanks, Aaron.
Oh, thank you for having me here.
So, Aaron, you know, nationally there are about 145,000 graduate students like yourself who receive these tuition waivers. That's according to the College and University Professional Association for Human Resources. And I'm curious for you, can you explain how this process works? I know some of our listeners may not really be familiar with the idea of a tuition waiver. Specifically, what do you do and what does it mean in terms of your tuition?
Yeah, sure. So it's I want to start off by saying it's very program dependent and it's also very school dependent.
Okay.
So in my case, which is what I can speak to the most, I guess, is that I do research for professors at the institution. So in exchange for our research, we can study there tuition free.
All right. So can you kind of walk me through your finances? How much are you paid a stipend of any sort?
Sure, yeah. So we're paid a stipend. So I'm a pre-qualifier graduate student. So those are graduate students who haven't passed those big exams that let you be a PhD candidate.
Yes.
So because I'm pre-qual, I get paid the master's rate, which is about $33,000 a year.
That's your annual salary.
That's my annual salary before taxes.
Got it. And how much is your tuition worth?
So MIT's tuition is just shy of $50,000 a year.
So that's the price tag.
Yeah, that's the price tag of the tuition.
Got it. And so if this House bill became law, your total income would go to, help me out, $84,000?
So if we're kind of, if we're not adding in all of the different deductions that are under that plan, my taxable income is around $80,000.
Okay, got it. And so have you done the math at all of looking at how your tax bill would increase and
by
how much?
Yeah, it's really, really rough. So even with that $12,000 standard deduction that they're giving us or that they're giving all personal standard deductions,
yes,
I would still go up around $10,000 a year.
Your tax?
My taxes.
Bill. Wow.
Exactly.
Okay. So gosh, that's quite a hefty bill. I just had to take that in for a bit. So can you give me a sense real quick? So how much are you currently paying in taxes?
So we pay, again, it's pretty dependent, but it's around $3,000 to $4,000.
And so you're looking at a tax bill that would be about like $13,000 to $14,000.
Yeah, so it's around a 240% increase.
Okay. You know, Aaron, you also wrote in that New York Times piece about a unique medical situation and how that somewhat also complicates your financial situation. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
I can, yeah. So in 2015, so in January of 2015, I was diagnosed with CRPS, which is complex regional pain syndrome. It's also known as reflex sympathetic dystrophy. It's effectively a very, very small orphan disease that causes longstanding chronic pain and like the inability to use a limb.
Oh, wow. Okay. And do you feel that in a particular limb at this point?
Yeah. So that's my right leg.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so does that affect, I mean, your financial situation, I presume, at this
point? Oh, absolutely. So the big treatments for that are like biweekly physical therapy, which gets, even with insurance, is very expensive in terms of copays.
So how much of your income do you think goes towards that?
It's around 20%.
20% of your monthly income?
My monthly income, yeah.
Oh, wow. So, you know, Aaron, I am sympathetic, right, to what you're describing, but I also, you know, I hear the argument, and there is an argument to be had, that you receive these tuition waivers as a condition that you work for the school, right? You either teach or you do research, and that since you're working for the university, why shouldn't these waivers be considered income for tax purposes, right? That they're a benefit. And what's your take? I mean, how do you respond to that?
I'm sorry, so that they're
that there's
not
an argument to be had that this is income, right? That you're working for the university and you would otherwise be receiving income, or you would be receiving this benefit in some other financial way, right? It wouldn't be in the
course,
form of a tuition waiver. And so how do you respond to that? Or do you recognize that that is a very real legitimate argument?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's definitely a legitimate argument. And I guess what I would say to it is that we never see that money, so we don't get the choice as to what we should do with it. So we don't get the choice to either take out a loan to pay for that tuition. It just immediately goes from, like, this nebulous waiver into tuition.
I see. Would you prefer the option to be able to make that decision to take out a loan?
I think in this case, it's much, much easier to have it done in this current structure of just having them waive tuition. But that's, again, for my own personal choice. So I do see the arguments against it.
Got it. So, you know, I spoke, one of our producers here spoke earlier with Preston Cooper. He's a research analyst for the American Enterprise Institute. He says that the plan will not, as you write in your article, quote, bankrupt graduate students. Here, let's take a listen, actually, to what he had to say.
What I think will happen is that a lot of students who are currently receiving tuition waivers, the universities will just reclassify those waivers as scholarships, which would be untaxed under current law and under the proposal. So I highly doubt that many graduate students will see a major tax hike from this provision.
Erin, I'll let you respond, and then I actually have a follow-up question.
Okay, yeah. So I guess my first instinct is that it's actually a really really cool topic to talk about, and tuition reform is something I think this country needs to have a very solid conversation about. What I would say immediately is it isn't what we should be talking about right now, is that that bill seeks to impact graduate students immediately, and assuming that institutions can just immediately change to be able to reclassify tuition structures, I think is possibly not exactly what they're trying to go for with this bill.
Got it. But the bill does, you know, ensure that scholarships will not be taxed, and it protects that sort of category, right? Mm-hmm. And so you could have the argument that if you were open, or other colleagues of yours were open to the idea of receiving these tuition waivers in the form of scholarships, then in theory, universities would not then just offer tuition waivers. They'd offer scholarships instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess this really kind of comes down, in my opinion, to institutional elitism. So we have these big questions of really big schools with huge endowments can afford to do this quickly. But if you look at my undergraduate institution, which is at SUNY Albany, so University at Albany, it's much harder for public institutions to make these fast changes because they're boards of trustees. Sometimes they even have legislation involved.
In terms of going from a tuition waiver and
offering
a graduate student
scholarship.
Okay. Can I ask you a theoretical? I mean, would you accept a scholarship to work or to teach instead of a tuition waiver? I mean, in some ways I'm thinking maybe, you know, some people would say it's better for you. You'd have more flexibility if you wanted to.
Sure. So I guess, unfortunately, in my case, that's not something that's really financially possible for me. So if I knew that I was going to have to take out loans just to go to graduate school where I was already working, I wouldn't have been able to go just because of my medical costs.
But a scholarship.
Yeah, even a scholarship.
Right? Essentially, if they turned your tuition waiver instead into a scholarship.
I guess it would limit the universities that I would be able to go to those that can have and afford those scholarships.
Got it. All right. You know, you spoke a bit about broadly your concerns about what this law, or potential law, I should say, would do, and that it would essentially, quote, decimate American competitiveness. Can you explain what you meant by that?
Yeah, of course. So it's really interesting. I'm a member of the Science Policy Initiative at MIT, so we talk a lot about how basic research translates into industrial money and then therefore kind of drives the American economy. It really comes down to, if you limit the amount of graduate students or people who can have a graduate education, you're limiting research, which kind of in turn reduces the amount of output in American innovation.
Got it. And one quick final question for you. You're one graduate student at MIT, but I've been hearing here and there rumblings. We had a colleague of ours at NPR spent some time with, I think it was one of the graduate student unions there at MIT. What's sort of the vibe on campus? And specifically, I mean, have university administration reached out at all to you all?
Yeah. So our administration has been very supportive, but I think graduate students, especially at MIT and even other institutions, have even helped collaborate to write this original op-ed. So I want to extra thank my colleagues, Sandhya Subramanian and Jay Patel, who are instrumental and being able to collect information to kind of help get the word out that this matters to graduate students.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Erin.
Thank you.
That's Erin Rousseau. She's a PhD student at the Harvard-MIT program in health sciences and technology, studying mental health disorders. Her op-ed in the New York Times is called "The House Just Voted to Bankrupt Graduate Students." Stay with us. Coming up, did the sexual revolution of the 1960s give women a false sense of empowerment? I'm Asma Khalid. This is Radio Boston.